your money. Welcome to the show. My name is Susie Jones. And once again, we have with us this week Peg Webb, Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor, and the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, Bruce Helmer, and Financial Advisor. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Bruce.
Thank you, Susie Jones.
Yes.
Thank you, Susie Jones. Hi, Peg.
Good morning.
So, Susie and listeners, Peg, I actually think this is a fascinating topic today. We're going to talk about why so many people are afraid to spend money when they retire. And we've touched on it from time to time on the show before, Peg, but we've never really taken the deep dive that we're going to take today. And I think maybe a lot of listeners are surprised at this phenomenon where we have clients that have the economic wherewithal to spend money to enjoy their retirement, but they don't. And we're not talking about somebody that's happy, you know, with a simple lifestyle or being a homebody. If that makes you happy, that's fine. We're not talking about, you know, trying to spend money unnecessarily. We're talking about people that are sacrificing, giving up things that they want to do because they're afraid they can't afford them, even though we can demonstrate that they can. You work your whole life, you work 30 or 40 years, and you save money for your future. Now the future is today, and you're afraid to enjoy it. And that's what we're going to talk about. Peg?
Yeah, I think, you know, the psychology behind this reluctance to spend, you and I have worked with so many different clients over the years, and I would tell you that many, many of them have a fear of spending, especially if you retire when you're, let's say, 65 or younger. And the reason is because people now are just living so much longer, right? We're witnessing our parents living into their, you know, 80s, 90s, in some cases, 100 years old. And so that kind of throws you as to, you know, maybe you're going to be retired longer than you actually worked. So there's that longevity risk, the fear of running out of money. And I can say personally that, you know, I start to picture what would my life be like or how much money would I need. My mom is 87, but she's still, you know, doing silver sneakers and going and playing cards with people. And I'm thinking, I see her possibly making it to 100. And then I look at myself and, you know, should I be spending money or, you know, it's hard to see that crystal ball to know how much money are you going to need kind of the later in life. But I would be the first one to say, I coach people all the time because of health. I just said about my mom and she's doing great, but there's a lot of people out there that have early, you know, things that prohibit them from doing what they want to do. And I mean, just jumping around maybe with your grandchildren or, you know, taking a trip. The family wants to go to a cabin that's in the mountains and you feel like that's not something that you can do physically. So when it comes to the psychology of spending, first you have to kind of get over this hurdle that how long does your money have to last? And so that's the part that I think, Bruce, people have kind of these visions of what they'd love this retirement to look like, but yet we don't have that crystal ball to know, should we spend more now or do we save more for later? Bruce?
Yeah, and that's a great place to start, Peg, because that I think that is the biggest thing. And you know, fearing running out of money before you run out of breath, to some extent, you know, I think it's how we're wired, or maybe it's based on life experiences when we grew up. You know, if we're children of parents that went through the Depression, or maybe we grew up. I know I did in a situation that I grew up poor. And I think, you know, that you're a product of your environment, you're a product of your experience. So on some level, I get that. And also, I wanted to mention, Peg, the reason that we are talking about this, if this was something that we saw every once in a while, it wouldn't be a topic for the show. But this is a prevalent thing. This is something that we see frequently. And I think a lot of people think, well, you probably also have a lot of clients that spend too much and you have to tell them not to spend so much. And I would tell you that that does happen. I'm not going to say it never happens, but it pales in comparison to how often we have clients that we have to encourage them to, that they can afford to enjoy life, that they can afford to check things off their bucket list. They can travel. They can gift to their children. They can give to charity, that they've got the economic wherewithal to do it. But I like where you started, that this longevity risk, I think, is a logical thing. And I think part of that, again, is even people are influenced by the way they're wired or their life experience. Peg, I think that the other one that I want to talk about, and I understand this one also, is if you make this transition, you worked for 30 or 40 years, you contributed your company retirement plan, maybe you had other saving strategies outside of that plan, this saver's mentality, this investor's mentality, and now you retire and you're not only not going to save and invest anymore like you've done for 40 years, but you're actually going to pull money out of that account, and that account might shrink in front of your very eyes. That's a tough one also, Peg.
Yeah, it's interesting in how many people's lives we have lived through in the decades that you and I have done this. And I so agree with what you just said, that our upbringing has a lot to do with how loose we kind of are with our wallet. And it isn't so much that we don't see the vision of living longer and having this want of actually helping, you know, the children, because what I can tell you is I have a lot of clients that watch their children kind of struggle, because today it's different than Bruce when you and I were in our 20s or our 30s and we were raising a family. Everything is just so much more expensive today. And so it's like the clients want to help these kids, but yet they're reluctant to, because that isn't what we did, right? We had to go out and just fight for everything, and there was no gifting to us when we were 40 or having these young children to help out. And so there's kind of this push you, pull you when it comes to gifting to the next generation or even your grandchildren for college. I have to a lot of times really sit down with people and have this kind of a hard conversation of, you have so much wealth that I really don't believe you're going to run out based on the way that you live. So maybe you do want to gift to your grandchildren for college, or, you know, give to the children to help them get in a house or somewhere in a school district that you want your grandchildren to grow up in. But a lot of the clients, Bruce, will say to me, you wouldn't believe how my children are living today. Like, they've got these grandiose houses and they've got debt, and, you know, that isn't the generations that we had. So you have to kind of get over that a little bit, especially since, you know, you've created this wealth. There is this provision that you can gift $19,000 if you're a couple each, to each member of your family without any kind of a tax impact or even having submitting anything to the IRS that you're giving money to the next generation. And I would say, Bruce, that a lot of people, after we educate them about that idea, and whether it be for education or getting a home or in a school district you want your grandchildren to be in, I'm seeing more and more now, especially because the S&P 500 has grown 80% in the last 5 years. I mean, that's huge. So people are starting to feel a little bit more confident that they can give money to the next generation and feel like they're going to be okay themselves. Bruce?
Yeah, I think you actually talked about this a little bit, even just on last week's show, where you gave an example, your daughter Nicole, I think, working with some clients that had adult children that were struggling, and they had the economic wherewithal to help, and they weren't helping. And Nicole had to say, look, you love these children. You love your grandchildren. Why aren't you helping them right now while they're struggling? So wasn't that came up?
Yeah. And, you know, they didn't, until we talked about that out loud, and Nicole was the one who introduced that. She said, until she brought it out loud at the table, they didn't even consider it. Right. They just didn't, because that is not how they grew up. That is not how they, you know, worked hard to save all this money. And it's just now that they're believing in their early 70s that they can go for extensive longer trips, you know, and vacations. And they have friends now that, you know, go on these 2-week cruises, and they're saying, you know what? I think we're going to go. I went, go, because we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. But back to what you said, Bruce, I'm witnessing, and Nicole was the one that brought this up, is I'm witnessing, too, that people are helping the next generation, because, quite frankly, it is different today. I cannot believe how much things cost today. I mean, it was just a huge reality check on when you start to get out there, and maybe you plan a trip, or, you know, you want to purchase something for your grandchild, or I'm just, things are costing a lot more, Bruce.
Yeah. And the thing that I mentioned, and I'll mention it again quickly now, I'm a very blessed guy, and I recognize that, and I acknowledge it every day. I did not grow up, neither did you, Peg, in a wealthy family where money was gifted to me. In fact, I had to help my parents later in life financially because they didn't have any savings or investments. And again, I'm not looking for anybody's sympathy. I'm a blessed guy. But my situation is very different in that I have the economic wherewithal to help my children. And I'm also blessed that they actually, at this point, don't need my help. They're well-launched. They have good jobs. They're making good income. They don't need my help. But I like to gift them a little something every year anyway, because it makes my heart happy. Like I've told my kids, look, when I leave this world, there's going to be inheritance money for you, but I'm not going to enjoy that. I will be gone. Let me enjoy this now because it makes me happy. And I haven't yet, Peg, been blessed with grandchildren as you have. And that makes a difference in the amount of generosity you want to show loved ones also, right?
They're absolutely, absolutely. But I want to go back to the reality of our health and seeing it as almost like a window of opportunity, because people are, you know, they want to wait. And now you're 80 and you can, one of you, and it's probably your, one of your significant other, your spouses, can't do like the physical demands of doing a travel trip. I've gone on a lot of these river cruises, and I like that because they stop right in the city and you just get off the boat and you can walk around and do all these excursions and things. And forevermore, there's people that are, you know, 80 years old plus, and God love them, they're going to go on these same excursions that a 60-year-old goes on, and they're demanding, you know, that they go, but yet somewhat they're slowing the other people up that are on the boat or whatever. But I look at them and go, you go, girl, or you go, guy, you know. But I would say the timeline of when you go, you have to have the reality of your health in mind. And I believe that people should go earlier than ever. And we have clients that are climbing mountains in Switzerland, and they're 78 years old. I mean, I'm just, there's so much to admire by people just, you know, trying to stay healthy and mobile for as long as they can. Bruce?
Yeah, I love that you went back to health, because let's be honest, none of us is promised tomorrow. We've seen it countless times over the years. Somebody that's healthy today might not be healthy tomorrow. So, you know, take advantage of these opportunities while you can, if they're important to you, if they're a high priority, if they're on your bucket list. And maybe that's a good segue, Peg. So far, we've just talked about the reality of the issue, the problem. if we just give the negative that we have all these people afraid to spend money, but we don't offer any solutions of how to overcome it, we're just creating a very negative show. So let's talk a little bit about, okay, we acknowledge this is a thing. Now, how do we get past it? And I think the first one is recognizing what's important to you and your core values.
Yeah, and we probably address this every week, if not whatever every other week, is just what matters the most to you. And, you know, what I find is not a lot of people sit down and ask themselves that question often enough. Like, if you're conflicted with spending, you need to clearly identify what's important to you. I see so many clients say, you know, we're going to go on this Mediterranean cruise, but I'm going to ask my kids if they want to come with me for free. And you know what? That's actually kind of a selfish thing almost, because you're asking them, let's spend 10 days together solid, and the money doesn't matter to them. Well, that's somebody who's figured out what is important to me right now, spending time with that family, traveling with them, giving the gift of education, you know, maybe helping out your favorite charities. And research just constantly shows us that once you start doing that, there's such a high rate of satisfaction of sharing and actually changing your life because you're following what's important to you, Bruce.
Yeah, and if we do that, and that, you know, like you said, that includes time with family, and you're willing to pay for that time if they can't afford it. It's an investment, right? It's not just spending money. You're getting the joy and the happiness and the love of time with those loved ones. So there's a return. See it as an investment. Or we like to talk about, you know, creating permission to spend. Peg?
Right. And that's just overcoming this fear of spending. And it's planning. It's a financial plan. If you created a bucket of money that you've identified that's what you're going to do, you're going to share that money. You're going to not only enjoy it yourself, but having your family, even friends, go on a big trip. If you have that, maybe what you do is you set aside this bucket of money and say, that's what this is for. And also you have to give yourself permission to spend. There are so many clients that are still in the state of fear that they are going to run out of money. And a lot of times it's women. But if you set aside this money, this annual budget, I think you can get beyond that. And it's worked in our practice, you know, to walk through that with people and do some mental accounting. Maybe you call it your travel fund or your family gifting account. And if it disappears off your ledger and say that's what that's for, that psychology, Bruce, tends to work.
Yeah, I remember a case. I've had this happen a lot, but one in particular comes to mind where I had a client, Peg, that their dream or their goal after retirement was kind of to have this little hobby farm, and they had it and they were enjoying life. And I remember they called me one day and they said, we need to put together, we need a pole barn. And it wasn't like an option. It's like doing what they were doing with this hobby farm. They had to have the pole barn to store stuff indoors so it wasn't outside and whatnot. So it wasn't even a choice. They needed to do this consistent with their core values. Yet they were reluctant to spend the money. And I'm like, this is what you always wanted to do. This is why you saved and invested for 40 years. This is your dream. Why, you know, why would you be hesitant now? Don't see it as an expense. See it as an investment in fulfilling your dream. We've only got a couple minutes left. Peg, I don't know if we'll get all through all of this before we have to take a break. But there's also some myths around spending or not spending in your retirement. Maybe we can hit one or two of these before we take a break. What are some of the myths that we see?
Yes, I love that because this is kind of going to be a repeat, but I know everyone listening can hear it again, meaning a myth is I must earmark 2/3 of my wealth to my health care for the future. Well, that's going to stop you in your tracks, and you're not going to do anything while you have the ability to do it or to include your children. Medical, we know not only is medical costing more, but we also know that on our taxes, Medicare takes money out from our Social Security every single month. So, and we feel like that's going up and up and up. So that expense kind of halts us from wanting to do anything, but that's a myth. Also, the market volatility could ruin my retirement. Really? If you have 10, 20, 30, maybe 40 years of time in retirement, you have to have the right allocation to have the comfort that you're still going to have a percentage that's going to grow, you know, and keeps up with inflation. And so that's important to make sure that you don't get too conservative too soon. And then you just don't want to be wasteful in your spending and not have a financial plan, because I think then you're going to waste some of your future. Bruce?
Yeah, Susie, I know we're due for a break. We'll finish up our discussion in the second half, and we'll let listeners get involved. And time for a lot of questions today, I think.
All right, very good. If you are listening, 651-461-9226. Maybe you're in this situation right now. 651-461-9226. Back after this quick. And welcome back to the second half of Your Money. I am Susie Jones once again with Bruce Elmer and Peg Webb of the Wealth Enhancement Group. And we're talking about spending in retirement and the anxiety that goes along with that, and some overcoming, I should say, some common retirement spending myths, things that are not true. Bruce and Peg, we'll let you get back to it. And then we do have people on the phone and online with questions for you.
Thank you so much, Susie Jones. That's a nice little recap. We appreciate it. So if you joined us late, listeners, we've been talking about financially successful retirees that still find themselves reluctant to spend the money that they worked so hard to accumulate over their lifetime. Many financially successful people, they dream of a certain retirement that includes travel and hobbies and charitable giving. And yet, despite having accumulated this money, now they're retired and they find themselves reluctant to spend it. And this is a phenomenon that is not uncommon. Peg and I see this frequently. That's why we're talking about it today, because it is so prevalent and affects so many people. We agreed in the first half of the show that a lot of this might be psychology, the way you're wired or the way you were brought up, your life's experience can contribute to this. We talked about, for a lot of people, the transition from saving and investing all those years to suddenly not only not saving and investing anymore, but actually pulling money out of these accounts and seeing the account balance go down is disconcerting for a lot of people. And we talk about the joy and the practical benefits of spending this money. This, after all, is why you work so hard, why you saved it in the first place, so you could enjoy it, so you can have the lifestyle that you want and help your kids if you want, give to charities if you want. And so, and then we also talked about, you know, the fact that health is unpredictable. We don't know how long we're going to be here. That can be a blessing and a curse. Some people fear dying too soon. Some people fear living too long and having their money not last. We talked about, if you're going to get over this, you got to look at what's really important to you, your core values. What's the retirement? What's the lifestyle that you want? And you can't worry too much about not having the money to do these things. And by the way, it's my job and Peg's job to tell you if you are spending too much money. And it's been suggested to me before, Peg, that that's probably a hard conversation to have with somebody, but it's really not. They'd rather know now than when they're running out of money. So that's an easy conversation to have. If somebody's spending too much, we can talk them, you know, down. And then finally, we talked about myths. People were worried that, well, I have to earmark so much for healthcare. And while it's true that healthcare is not cheap, we take that into account when we do this financial modeling, when we do these future value forecasts. We take those costs into account, and we've got money in the plan set aside for this. And so if we're accounting for that, that means you can spend money to enjoy life because we've accounted for that cost. Other people say, well, yeah, but the market might crash. Well, it might, and it has before, and it probably will again, but that's only going to hurt you if you don't have an efficient asset allocation. And again, we talk about short-term, mid-term, and long-term money. and only your long-term money is in the stock market. Your midterm money and short-term money is in vehicles that won't be negatively impacted if there's a huge market retraction. So a stock market retraction shouldn't be anything to worry about if you're properly allocated. And then we talked about spending or investing for lifestyle enjoyment is different than wasteful spending. And I said, look, if you're happy with a simple life, not spending money, that's great. Be happy. But if you're not happy, if you're not doing things that you want to do for fear that you can't afford it, and I know that you can, I want you to get over that fear, and I want you to enjoy yourself. So, Peg, final thoughts before we get listeners involved.
Yeah, super quick is that when we're dealing with people that just first retire, right? It's just we have to try to coach them to embrace the retirement that you've earned. You've worked for decades. You've had this vision of this day coming. But what I can say is it's easier said than done, right? Because you're just so ingrained in what you used to do and your accounts just got bigger. But now it's time to take that accumulation stage that you've been in and enjoy some of the fruits of your labor. And I can't tell you how hard that is for people, and especially when couples are sitting at our table. One has just been waiting for this day, and the other one is a nervous Nelly about, you know, spending. And so we actually a lot of times have to help couples get through working on that together. And then we've already said, and you repeated it, Bruce, is if you have your core values and you know what's important to you, that's so much easier. And remember that money is really just a tool, you know, to help your family, causes that you care about. And if that's all ingrained in you, then you're able to enjoy retirement. But the call to action is just maybe you want to just write down three experiences or goals that you guys have delayed. Write them down and work together as a couple if you're a couple. And then just discuss how would you like to, you know, utilize your money and lean on your financial advisor. I have to say the value that we bring is experience from working with all these different people over decades of time. We have so many stories we can tell, the ones that did well, the ones that didn't turn out so well. And that's what I think people want. They want to know how do I fall, you know, in this decision-making. And they want our conviction that they can afford to do these things. And not just one time, we have to convince them ongoing that it's okay. Bruce?
I think that's a good wrap-up, Susie. I think we can let the listeners drive the rest of the show.
All right, very good. 651-461-9226. That's the number to call or text if you're listening and have a question. 651-461-9226. Let's start out with a call. We have Kelly calling today from Oak Grove, Minnesota. Kelly, go ahead. You're on the air with Bruce and Peg.
Hey, good morning. I'm backing up a little bit to what you talked about with having a vacation account or something like that. My husband and I are retired, but this is something that we've been doing for years and was a complete game changer for us. When we would get our direct deposit of money coming in, and now we do this with our financial advisor and have it set up, but we get our money, and we don't have just one bank account. We have four different bank accounts. One where we split it out and our household bills are covered. One where we have plenty of money for daily expenses, and absolutely one for vacation. So we put a nice chunk of money every month into a vacation account. We're able to see that grow. And when it's there, we can go on vacation. Budgeting or feeling like we have to skimp on our vacations, because it's built into our budget. And we're right now watching it grow so that we can take our adult kids with us soon on a vacation that we've talked about. And there's just no better feeling than having that paid and saved up front and knowing that that's not going to be a problem at all.
Hey, Kelly, thank you for sharing that, and say hi to all our friends in Oak Grove. I know where you are. So, Peg, what a great call from Kelly. And you've actually talked about this before, how going back to early in your life, you had envelopes, right? You put different money in different envelopes and segregated for different things rather than having all the money commingled in one place. That's what Kelly's really talking about here, is different accounts escrowed for different things.
Yeah, Bruce, I'm surprised that you remember my envelopes, because we're going back decades.
I remember your envelopes, Peg.
Yeah, my envelope, because it gets away from you, right? Now, that was even earlier than when you could open up four or five different bank accounts. I like what Kelly's saying, is they're segregating their money and they're coding them for a purpose. And that actually drives you. I mean, now we're talking about the psychology of people, but it actually drives you to do what you truly want to do. But if you put it in one bucket, it gets lost. You know, so if the roof needs a repair, or, you know, there was a school trip that your children or your grandchildren want to go on, and it's more costly than you can afford, and you're just pulling it out of a general account, that doesn't have that same purpose feeling. And so, yes, going back to my envelopes, is one of the things with the envelopes was, when the envelope was empty, there was no more money for that particular month, right? You had to make that money last for that month. And then the other envelopes we just didn't want to touch, because they were for these purposes that Kelly's talking about. We wanted to take the kids on vacation. And I have to tell you that doing that and having those experiences when your kids were young, my husband always said, you know, if we're going anywhere, we're not buying two tickets, we're buying four. So even when our kids were young, we took them everywhere, because we witnessed, living through these people's lives, Bruce, is that they leave the house, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're disconnected and they've got their own lives. So I love that he had the idea that you buy four tickets, you don't buy two. Bruce?
Well, yeah, and Kelly, to your point, Peg, If she does need to repair the roof, or she does need to repair the heating and cooling in the house, that money's probably going to come from some other account. It's not going to come from the vacation account. So if you paid for that, and now it's done, you've taken care of it, and you still have your vacation account, Kelly knows that she can still afford that vacation. So what a great call. I love that idea of different, you know, buckets of money for different things. And you know, I didn't really think about it until her call, but I guess I do the same thing in my life. Not all my money is sitting in one account. I've got it spread in a lot of different places with a lot of different goals and objectives for each account. And based on the goal or objective, you also invest differently. The time horizon might be different. The desired rate of return might be different. So that absolutely makes sense. Kelly, thank you so much. What a great opening call. Susie?
651-461-9226. You too can call if you're listening right now and you're in this situation that so many of us are. A texter writes, "We are both 68 years old and living off our 401ks and Social Security. We are drawing $9,000 every 3 months, which is 4%, and we're doing fine. We need a car. Should we pay cash from the 401k or wait for interest rates to go lower?" I've heard this one a bunch from people that I know. Should you just say, you know, I have the money, just do it? Well, that's good. I wonder about that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, Peg, there's actually several different questions in this one question. The first thing that jumped out at me was they're adhering to 4% withdrawal rule. We can maybe talk about that if you want to, but we don't have to, I guess. But then the bigger question seems to be, we have an expense that's in addition to our typical expenses, and in this case, it's a car. What's the best way to pay for it? Do we finance it and pay somebody interest, or do we just pay it ourselves since we have the money? But if it's money in a 401k, there's going to be tax consequences to taking that withdrawal to pay cash for the car. So you have to do, you know, some math here and determine, what's a greater cost, paying somebody a little bit of interest or paying the IRS taxes? And I'll let you jump on all those questions.
Yeah, this kind of leads me back to our buckets of money, right? To have, ideally, you'd have a third, a third, a third. And a third is, the first third is after-tax money, where you've already paid your taxes and now maybe it's in a savings account, or you've invested it, but you don't have that burden of the second bucket, which is tax deferred, or you have a big IOU to the IRS, and that would include this 401k, 403b, money that you that's grown probably sizable, but you still have that big IOU. And then the third other is tax advantage. So Roth IRAs, municipal bonds, something where you're not paying annually to the government. Well, if indeed you're one of these people, and let me tell you, there is a huge percentage of people who defer all their money through their employer, and you've worked at places, and it doesn't have to be the same place, but you've just accumulated this wealth through this IRA that's all taxable. And Bruce, you mentioned it. If you're going to buy a $40,000 car, it could cost you $55,000, right, to get your money out of that IRA to pay for that car. So now you have to think, this wasn't a $40,000 car. This was actually a $55,000 car, because by the time you had to pay the tax. So hopefully you have a little bit more money set aside that maybe you could take a percentage. And this is what we like to do when we're coaching clients taking income every year. Maybe you're taking it a little bit from each type of taxed bucket to make it not be a huge blow, you know, on buying that car. The other thing I would say is when it comes to that 4% rule, Bruce, if they're taking 4% out, I'm very comfortable with that, but I don't know what the allocation is. If it's all in safe money and you're pulling out 4%, yes, that probably works today since money markets are still at 4.5%. But that's not gonna be here forever. So what I like to tell people is you still have to be allocated, especially at 68 years young, that you still need growth in your portfolio so that you can pay for things in the future. And we're seeing really high inflation right now, and I don't see that ending anytime soon. So you need to have some type of growth vehicles in there. And then lastly, taking the loan. If indeed they have any loans that are under 4%, to me, it would be best just to take that loan and make sure you have the ability to pay it off if you'd like to in the future, and not be stuck with, let's say, a five-year loan that you can't prepay. Bruce?
Yeah, that was a great answer, Peg. So just to summarize really quickly, if they had tax diversification, they would have options of where to get this money to pay cash for the vehicle. It might come from some from a taxable account, some from maybe if they had a Roth and they can get money from a tax-free account. But it sounds like they have to take it out of this tax-deferred account, meaning they're going to pay taxes on all the withdrawals. But that versus borrowing, I think there's human instinct to say, I've got the money. Why would I pay somebody interest when I can just pay cash myself? But in this case, the Texter's case, the amount of interest that they pay to finance it pale in comparison to the amount of tax they would have to pay if they pulled that all out of a taxable 401k. So if they don't have tax diversification, they may actually want to finance. If they did it, it sounds like they're in a good situation overall, but it sounds like they might be missing some tax diversification that we would have tried to help them achieve. Susie?
All right, 651-461-9226. A texter writes, is there a formula for calculating how much money a person can spend in retirement? The person says, I think people avoid spending because they don't know how much they can spend without risking financial hardship. And can you do that on your own, or do you really need a financial advisor to help you through retirement?
Well,
it's a loaded question. I'm teasing.
I mean,
go ahead.
You could probably figure it out on your own, but I think there's a lot of variables that most people aren't going to consider. But Peg, this comes back to what we were just talking about. The rule of thumb in our industry, and I frankly don't give it a lot of credibility, but the rule of thumb is that the safe withdrawal rate is 4%. But that can change dramatically based on individual circumstances. It might be a lot better or it might be worse. Peg?
Yeah, and I think this rule of 4% is hunky-dory if indeed you have tax diversification.
Yeah.
Because once again, if it's all in a deferred account, which again, a lot of people have saved, you know, their wealth in deferred accounts, it hurts you long-term, meaning just the taxes that you have to pay. So this rule of 4%, I believe in it long-term, but I also believe that you need to know when to change where you're taking your withdrawals from. Like right now, the stock market is so high that I'm encouraging people to take money out of the stock market to live versus taking it out of their savings. And the reason is because we are in a very high state in the stock market, and why not at least maybe you take the dividends or you take out some money and you rebalance it because the stock market has done so well. So there's a lot more to it. And I have to say that I believe in financial advisors because they can see the entire picture.
Right. Where you might not be able to. Is there a way to take money out of a 401k, or is there no getting away from paying Uncle Sam, as Bruce likes to say? Or if you've got all that dough, have got all that dough in your 401k and you're nervous to touch it, A, for fear that you'll go over your tax bracket, or B, that you'll have to pay so much in tax. There's nothing to do to get that money out of 401k without paying taxes. That's the question.
Peg?
Yeah, there is no, you have an IOU to the IRS, bottom line.
Okay.
How you take it out would be, you know, you need to be strategic about that.
Yeah, so really quickly, Susie, and I, we're almost out of time, but back to the, can you do it yourself or do you need an advisor? So let's go back to the person that also wanted to buy a car, and let's say they need $50,000. If you had tax diversification, maybe the first $25,000 can come out of a tax-deferred account at 10%. Maybe you're only in a 10% bracket, but if you take more than that, you jump to a 12% bracket or even a 22% bracket. So you might say, I'm going to take $25,000 out of my 401k at 10% and the other $25,000 out of cash that's not an IRA to get to my 50. But if I don't have tax diversification, I don't even have that as an option, and I have to pay tax on everything that comes out of that 401k or tax deferred plan, unfortunately. So I know we're about out of time. Good questions, though. Thank you, listeners. That's really good stuff.
Yeah. And if you did not get your question answered, you can write this down, yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. You can email your questions and someone will call you back. Or you can always call this number 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It is 1-888-6-ADVICE. 1-888-6-ADVICE. Don't do it alone. Call Wealth Enhancement. Make it a great week. Break.